Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everybody. And now we continue our 2013 election series, 30 issues in 30 days. Let others obsess about the horse race, or lack thereof, in New York and New Jersey right now. We will cover the issues, and we're tackling education all this week. Today we're going to talk about parental involvement. Parents have felt locked out during the Bloomberg years, so we're going to talk about what could be a productive role for parents in the school system moving forward and look into what the candidates are saying. With me now in the studio, WNYC's education reporter Yasmeen Khan, and on the phone from reporting in the education field, Beth Fertig. And, of course, they both also post their work on schoolbook.org. Hi, Yas. Hi, Beth.
Good morning.
Hi.
And parents, the phones are open for you. What changes do you want to see specifically in the way the school system communicates with parents or invites parents in to the policymaking tent? 212-433-WNYC. What's been your experience during the Bloomberg years, and how do you want to see parental involvement change under the next mayor? 212-433-9692. Or teachers, principals, if you're listening on a break, we want to hear from you too. What's the most productive role for parents? And as we take your calls, we also want to know if you think it's important for the mayor to be a public school parent. Bill de Blasio is advertising the fact that he would be the first. Does it matter to know the needs of the public school system? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Beth, why did parents feel so locked out, or at least vocal parent groups feel so locked out during the Bloomberg years?
A lot of it had to do with the mayor's plan to open more schools, to give parents more choices. And on one hand, that sounds like a great idea. It's something parents would want. But the way it was executed, because of mayoral control, also alienated parents because they no longer had as much of a voice in the process as they did under the old Board of Education system when there were local school boards. Now, those local school boards disappeared for a reason. State leaders wanted to get rid of them because they were persuaded by the city's previous chancellor and mayor that they were, in some cases, corrupt, that they had too much power over choosing principals and superintendents. But in the end, they were replaced with what are now called community education councils. These are parent councils, really. Elected PTA leaders are allowed to run for these seats. But they don't have any say. They're just advisory. So they can, the one thing they have control over is the zoning of a local school, the boundaries of, you know, what kids are going to get to go to a local school. But when the city proposes closing a school, opening new schools in that building, putting a charter school in that building, these folks have a hearing on it where they hear about the elements of this and they get to maybe register their displeasure or their questions, but ultimately they have no veto power or role in the siting of it. So this has created a lot of friction as the city has opened 600 schools under Mayor Bloomberg's tenure over the past 12 years, 600 schools, well, most of those have been sited in existing public school buildings, and it creates tensions when you suddenly take one school, even if the mayor says it was failing, an old high school, and you replace it with five or four small new schools, maybe a charter school. People start to feel like their turf is literally being invaded and they have no say over it. So that's been the one real controversial aspect.
So, yes, the mayoral control law is up for renewal in June of 2015. Is there any sense that either of the candidates, de Blasio or Joe Lota, would allow mayoral control to sunset or be weakened in the name of parent power?
No, I don't think so. I mean, both are in favor of mayoral control. You know, we've heard a lot, especially from Bill de Blasio, on parent engagement in terms of his and his role as public advocate and as a parent and everything. How, you know, the changes that they would make, it's unclear if they would make any concrete changes to create a new sort of system of checks and balances, at least. Bill de Blasio has talked about the idea of community education councils having more say, being more involved. Joe Lota, you know, also has talked about, you know, changing the tone and making sure parents are heard and included more. But I guess we're not really sure how they would actually change what happens now.
So let's bring the candidates' voices in a little bit, since this is in the context of our mayoral election series. And there is a sense that Loda and de Blasio sort of agree that parents should be more involved in the educational system than they were allowed to be under Bloomberg. Here's a clip of Joe Loda from earlier this month.
We are one city, but we need to make sure that there are communities. And as part of that community, as well, is making sure that parents are involved in the education process. Part of what's gone on with mayoral control, which I am a huge supporter of, is that some parents believe that their input isn't there anymore. I want to make sure that their input is there. Parents are an integral part of the education process. And at the same time, I want to work with the teachers.
Joe Loda, and here's de Blasio at a UFT forum held this summer, also talking about bringing parents more into the fold.
Districts matter. I was on District 15 school board. Districts matter. We need to find a way to get parents to be able to talk to someone at the district level, teachers, principals relating to leadership at the district level again. We need big decisions like our curriculum to be done in consultation with teachers and parents. If you consulted right away, we would get away from high-stakes testing and we get away from a culture test prep, because the actual consumers, the actual practitioners, would tell you it doesn't work.
And de Blasio got even a little bit more specific on what he would change about the mayoral control system at that same UFT forum over the summer.
So right away, change the structure to talk to the people who do the work and make the decisions with them. That's a whole different approach that would change education in this city for the better. I want a PEP that can actually debate and challenge the mayor. I want community education councils that play a role like a community board does in land use, a role on decisions about school closures and co-locations.
And let's hear from some parents. Rachel in Red Hook, you're on one of the community education councils, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. I'm actually the chairperson of District 15, de Blasio's former school board. It's the CEC for District 15. And the comment I wanted to make is that I would like to see the Department of Education engage parents more by informing them about schools and public schools and what their choices are, rather than engaging in the language of choice, which is specifically designed to promote charter schools. But unfortunately, it does that by fear-mongering amongst parents. What we've seen in District 15 is that it's typically parents who have not even entered the school system yet, or parents with very young children in the school system who are scared that their schools are not going to be good enough, and they need this magical choice that's going to give them good schools, even though, you know, the irony is in District 15, we have fantastic public schools. But what you hear is this language around choice, which makes parents very anxious. And then, just very practically, what a mayor could do is make the Department of Education's website more user-friendly, so that if a parent is feeling anxious, they go onto the website and they can get information clearly in a comprehensive way. It's very hard even to get maps on the Department of Ed website. So I think there's some concrete ways and then some broad cultural ways to reduce fear and promote our public schools, and maybe that means a little less promotion of our charter schools.
Rachel, thank you very much for chiming in. And David in Howard Beach, you're on WNYC. Hello, David.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. When the schools were decentralized and Ocean Hill, Brownsville, and parents were declaring war on the public schools and war on teachers, a very wise guidance counselor in my elementary school in Richmond Hill suggested a structure that got us through all of that turmoil very, very nicely. She said the principal's in charge of the school, but it would be good for the principal to hear the teachers or the staff and the parents at one time in the same room at least once a month on issues of general concerns to the school. So we couldn't talk about Mr. Smith, who's not doing a good job. That's where the parents go and talk to the principal privately. But at least once a month, we all got to talk about school policy, school programs, general concerns. And that did not replace our private conversations with the parents.
I understand. But there was a structure for it. So, David, I'm going to get a reaction to that from our education reporter, Beth Fertig. Because, Beth, I think that the Bloomberg administration created what they saw as a similar structure with what they call school leadership teams, which includes some parents and some teachers. And I think they meet with the principal. They also created the role of parent coordinators. I think every school has had a parent coordinator in recent years who were supposed to kind of be go-betweens between the administration of the school and the parents. So it's not like they haven't tried to create some kind of structures, right?
Right. I mean, first of all, the school leadership teams are required by state law.
Mm-hmm.
And the parent coordinators, that was the innovation of Bloomberg to hire these. They're paid about $40,000 or more now a year to be the person who's going to really do interference with the parents so that the principal doesn't take those calls anymore. But they are hired by the principals, so they're not really independent. You know, they're school employees, so parents in some cases feel like they're not going to be the person who's going to give them a really fair hearing if there's a problem, because they don't want to make too many waves with the principal. However, they can, you know, as I said, run interference and really be helpful to parents. The other thing that Bloomberg has done, because they keep saying every few years, yeah, we hear you, we hear that you want more help, we hear that you're confused by the system and how to apply to schools. They've created a parent academy, and this is the second year of it. It's between the Department of Ed and Long Island University in Brooklyn, and they have workshops and presentations. They do citywide events. They say last year that 2,000 people attended 17 citywide sessions and over 30 school-based sessions where they can learn how to communicate effectively with their schools, prepare their kids for college, career, and life. You know, they learn about the curriculum, the new Common Core learning standards, things like that. But, you know, this is, you could say it's not really the same thing as, you know, mandating that parents have a role in issues such as the curriculum or the siting of schools. You know, this is more like, yeah, we hear you, we want to help you be involved parents. It's a totally different thing.
This is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River, New York and New Jersey Public Radio. It's our mayoral and New Jersey gubernatorial and Senate election campaign series, 30 issues in 30 days. Issue two today, parent involvement in the schools, and we'll get back to some of you parent callers in a minute. Our guests for this are WNYC's education reporters, Beth Fertig and Yasmin Khan. And Yas, you wanted to add something to what Beth was saying?
Yeah, well, first of all, I guess, you know, schools are communities and they all have different ways that they involve parents too. The school leadership team might play a more prominent role at one school than another. The PTA might play a more prominent role in some schools. I know principals who work very closely with the PTA treasurer, you know, to look at school budgets and that kind of thing. But Rachel, the caller from District 15, you know, brought up a key point of just how do parents get information? And being an informed parent in this city takes a lot of work, you know, in terms of going on the website or understanding the new big initiatives that are rolled out every year. You know, sometimes even the school calendar can be confusing. So especially if you're a parent that has to advocate for your child, you have to know your rights, you have to know the rules, and you have to be available to show up to the school and meet with the principal.
So here's another official of a community education council. This is Noah in Harlem. Noah, are you a parent as well?
I'm a parent of three in the system, Brian. She's a member of Community Education Council District 3, which is Upper West Side and Manhattan Valley in Harlem.
Okay. And?
Kind of witnessed parents being systematically disengaged from the system. Relations between the DOE and parents have been so acrimonious as to have really shut parents out. We talked about school leadership teams mandated by the state, but the DOE decides on the budgets before the school leadership teams get to weigh in on co-locations, closings, other issues that the CECs are supposed to weigh in on. We're essentially paid lip service to and systematically shut out. And what's happened is perhaps in response to the school boards having, theoretically having too much power, all the power and involvement of parents has been pushed to tweet. And so parents have nowhere to turn. They've set up, instead of superintendents and local involvement, where parents could go and talk, ask about enrollment issues, and talk about testing, can talk about problems in the schools, we have nowhere to turn.
And Noah, I'm curious your reaction to what the other caller from a community education council, Rachel in Red Hook, was saying about parents feeling anxious as opposed to served by a lot of school choice. All these schools that the Bloomberg administration has opened, hundreds of schools, as Yaz and Beth have been describing, and that parents feel more of a sense of anxiety than a sense of actually being empowered to make choices through the opening of so many new schools. Do you feel that way, too?
Absolutely. I'm going through the process with my daughter at the high school level, the parents at the middle school level, and even at the elementary and the zone school level, have enormous anxiety because the enrollment process has been pulled back. There's no community involvement. There's no local involvement. And so the enrollment process has been pulled back to tweet, and you have basically parents have to scramble. And in terms of choice, that's choice that's determined not by what parents want, but by what the DOE wants. And parents have almost overwhelmingly, in every poll, said, we want more choice in terms of involvement and investment in our public schools, not feeding more charter schools. We want investment in our existing schools. And we've been systematically ignored.
No, I'm going to leave it there. I thank you for your call. Yes, are there competing visions of the role of parents in education? Does it mean allowing parents to affect policy, as we've been hearing from our callers, that it's very important to them? Or does it mean helping kids stay on track and helping them with their homework? What is parent involvement?
Well, it's both of those things, certainly, in the city. And that's, you know, when Beth was talking about the parent academies, that those are the workshops that deal with the more hyper-local issues of preparing your, you know, student for college and understanding Common Core learning standards and those types of things and helping with homework. The involved parents that are informed and are, you know, on the community education councils, they certainly want more say. And I think that they feel that they represent the other parents in their communities. They talk to the other parents in their communities. They're in their schools every day. And they often do feel, you know, shut out, like the last caller said.
And how do teachers and principals feel about the role of parents under Bloomberg, Beth? Do you have a sense of it? I mean, I could imagine teachers and principals who are, you know, also in general no fans of the Bloomberg administration education policies, I think, but also feeling like, you know, parents, I don't go into your workplace and tell
right.
you how to run your job. We're professional educators. We're doing things for a reason here and because we're trained to do them right. So we don't want a lot of parent involvement. Does that dynamic exist?
I think it depends on the school. You know, sometimes they really come together and rally when they feel like they haven't been included in the decision-making process, specifically if it's about siting a new school in their building. There's other cases where they come together when they feel like, you know, we wanted to take this K-5 school and make it a K-8 school, and the city put another school in our building instead of letting us expand, you know. So those are the ways in which they often come together and feel like the city isn't listening to them. But I will say that this is a constant tension, not just in New York, but we've heard about it in Chicago, tons of other cities. How much role do you give to parents? And it's a cycle. You know, when the caller referred to Ocean Hill-Brownsville, that was in the 60s when parents wanted more control of their local schools. And the city decentralized the school system and created 32 community school boards. Well, during the 90s, people thought those school boards had too much power, and they wanted to re-centralize the system and put the mayor in charge of the schools, and the legislature did that for Mayor Bloomberg. Now we're at a point where the lawmakers are hearing from their constituents, you know, the city has been really running roughshod over what we want. They don't listen to us. Lawmakers are going to renew mayoral control. It comes up for renewal in a couple of years. I think it's every 7 years it comes up. It was last renewed in 2009 when they gave the community education councils a little bit more teeth. They were required to have public hearings before Bloomberg administration could open a new school or close a school. But I think what we're seeing right now is the people running for mayor are responding to this tremendous pressure from parents that says, we don't feel included. But they're also responding to Albany, which is ultimately going to decide, will you continue to have control over the schools? When Bill Thompson was running for mayor, he proposed that the panel for educational policy, which is currently controlled by the mayor, so if the mayor proposes a change like ending social promotion or closing schools, it's going to go his way. Bill Thompson proposed, I'm no longer going to control that panel. I'm going to have a majority of members who could, if they don't agree with me, I'm going to have to persuade them. And if they don't agree with me, then that's because I didn't come up with a great enough idea.
But he
was very cognizant.
But de Blasio and Loda are not going that far as to take...
We have not heard concrete proposals from them. De Blasio has said, I want them to have more of a say, but he hasn't specifically said how. So will this panel continue to be dominated by mayoral appointees? Nobody has said they want to take that away from themselves if they're elected mayor. No mayor is going to say, yeah, give me less power. But they are aware that Albany is watching. And if they're going to renew mayoral control, they need to show Albany that they're listening to their constituents a little bit more.
And that means to parents. So, Yaz, in our last 30 seconds, since de Blasio and Loda seem to be saying similar things about this, you think inevitably under the next mayor there's going to be a more formal structure for parental input, especially as whoever the next mayor is tries to maintain Albany's approval of mayoral control?
Well, if they make good on, all of the sentiments that they've been expressing on the campaign trail, and de Blasio specifically has been sort of tapping into that sentiment of not just including parents more, but recognizing that parents feel demoralized by this administration. He's been, using that kind of language. So if he makes good on, on this language that he's using, then he will, give parents more of a role.
And de Blasio makes a point that if he's elected mayor, he would be the first ever public school parent to hold that position. It would be true of Adolfo Carrion, too,
right,
if he's elected, because he's a public school parent. Their kids both go to elite high schools, selective high schools, so I don't know if that really means that they're in touch with the needs of the average kid around
right.
the five boroughs.
Loda says it doesn't give you any credibility necessarily to run a school system.
WNYC education reporters Yasmin Khan and Beth Fertig. You can see and hear all their work at schoolbook.org. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And that is 30 Issues in 30 Days, Issue 2, Parental Input into Schools. We continue Education Week on 30 Issues tomorrow by looking at the New Jersey issues in the governor and senator's races. That's tomorrow, Education in New Jersey, Issue 3. But let's not leave parents in schools quite yet. The way many parents participate in their children's educations is by giving money to the PTA. We know that these requests can be super high and come with lots of pressure to comply, but at least it's tax deductible, right? Well, my next guest argues that maybe it shouldn't be considered a charitable donation. He is Stanford political science professor Rob Reich, not to be confused with UC Berkeley economist and former Clinton cabinet member Robert Reich. But this Rob Reich argues that PTA giving exacerbates inequalities in our education system and should not be considered philanthropy. Rob Reich, welcome to WNYC. I understand you're joining us from Florence.
Indeed. Nice to be there.
But not too much of a delay on the phone, I'm glad to hear. So in your op-ed in the New York Times a couple of weeks ago, you say there are unintended negative effects of the way PTA donations work now. What did you have in mind?
Yeah, well, the op-ed I wrote really has two simple points. The first, as you've already mentioned, is that the parent-teacher associations, parent-teacher organizations have been around for a very long time, many, many decades, in order to try to stimulate the involvement of parents and the broader community in schools, and that's a completely welcome and worthwhile activity. But over the past, say, 10, 20 years, in especially wealthy areas, either the PTAs or PTOs themselves are sometimes totally independent offshoots, often called local education foundations, have have cropped up where the sole activity is to try to generate additional private dollars to supplement the public funds for the school. And that has the completely unsurprising outcome of allowing wealthy schools and wealthy communities to raise significantly more money than can poorer schools and poorer communities, where the parents then get to add several thousand dollars per pupil in annual spending in certain places to the already large amounts typically of public funding that goes to their children's education. And the fact that this gets counted under our current tax laws as a charitable contribution, tax deductible from the federal government and from the state government, seems to me both a perversion of the ordinary understanding of the word charity and something that the tax code could do something about. So to be clear, I'm not against the idea of calling a charitable contribution to a school charity when it actually goes to a school that is needy. But I don't want to provide, I don't think there's a justification in providing a big tax incentive to help already well-to-do parents mm-hmm. support their already comparatively well-off public schools and have a federal tax deduction to go along with it.
So, listeners, let me invite people in here. Do you think your PTA contribution to your child's school should be tax deductible? 212-433-WNYC, and you can answer this whether or not you currently have children in school. 212-433-9692. Do you think your PTA contribution or anyone's to your or their child's school should be tax deductible? 212-433-9692. You're hearing our guest's argument for how it exacerbates inequality. In fact, to go even further, Professor Rice, because it's tax deductible, lowering the taxes of that donor diminishes the tax revenues that the government receives. So essentially, the government is subsidizing these donations being given by parents who donate to their own kids' school. So the government is complicit in exacerbating the inequalities that already existed in the system in the first place by having even less money, in theory, to spend on the public schools itself.
Yeah, that's right. And let me be clear. I think the idea that parents want to support their own kids' school is both a natural and a welcome behavior. What I don't want to see happen is parents finding ways only in those very well-to-do suburban schools or small pockets of a larger school system, as in New York City,
right,
that you can raise thousands of additional dollars per pupil and other people can't.
But taking away the
parent-teacher organizations get the parents engaged in political activity to hold the state accountable for providing the adequate funds for all children's education that's important in the first place. That's the root cause of the problem. We wouldn't need parental fundraising at the level that we see in some places if we were getting adequate funds from the relevant local and state sources in the first place.
Chuck in the East Village, you're on WNYC. Hi, Chuck.
Hi, I totally disagree with him. I'm a school psychologist, and I have two grandchildren in school in the East Village, plus I have a child that's still in school. He's in high school. And education is deductible whether you're sending your kid to private school or public school. It's something that is benefiting the community. Now, if you're investing money in making a better school, it means the state doesn't have to do it. It means the federal government doesn't have to do it. And frankly, the federal government would rather spend money on guns than on butter. I mean, they're trying to deduct $40 billion in food stamps. How can we expect them to fund a school when they're not even paying right. for people that can't eat?
But our guest's argument is that if you're in a school district or a particular school where the parents are better off than in a lot of the city or a lot of whatever district, then it's going to exacerbate the inequalities, which already are such a big problem. So the better off school is going to be able to hire teacher's aides, all kinds of, you know, help and provide other kinds of enrichment to the kids that the lower income students don't get. And so they get disconnected from the political problem because they can take care of their own schools.
Well, I think there's a better way of going about it. the state and federal government should look at school districts to see which of these school districts need the state and federal funds and which of them have are wealthy enough mm-hmm. that they don't need it. So that
and Chuck, I'm going to leave it there, but Professor Reich, to his last point, and Chuck, I'm sorry to cut you off mid-sentence, just our time is short, but to the point that he was making, there's already extra money for so-called Title I schools, the low-income area schools,
That's
and
right.
things like that. So does the government smooth it out in other ways?
Sure. Just as you say, the federal government provides these compensatory funds mainly targeted at either poor kids through the free and reduced lunch program or through Title I programming for kids that come from either language backgrounds where English isn't the first language or other forms of learning difficulties. So there is some smoothing out there. I just wanted to point to the astonishing rise and amount that some of these local education foundations are raising and for providing core services. These are not frills on the side, you know, a sort of field trip to Washington, D.C. This is for class size reduction. This is for science labs. This is for basic librarian and advising services. The core functions of the schoolhouse in some of these wealthy districts are being privately supported and effectively generating a private school environment out of a public school, which in itself is no bad thing. It's a wonderful aspiration to improve a school system because it does have benefits for all people. But to crown this sort of parental behavior with the label philanthropy or charity seems to me a very strange thing to do.
But taking away the charitable giving tax benefit won't prevent rich parents from contributing to their PTAs. They're not doing it for the tax write-off. They're doing it because they really care about their kids. So is your proposal really the solution to the problem that you frame?
That's right. I mean, I don't want PTAs or PTOs to go out of existence. I want local education foundations to continue to try to organize parents. I want to try to provide both a shift to the behavior in order to get them to engage parents in the political process so that they begin to hold their city, their suburb, their town, their state, and even the federal government accountable for providing adequate funding, not merely for their own kids, but for other kids as well. When you allow parents to effectively top up their consumption of their own kids' education through a tax deduction, you give them a reason to opt out of a broader process in which we all ought to be contributing and participating anyway, the political process. Now, there's all types of dysfunction there. There's no guarantee that this all works out. But allowing the most politically savvy folks a kind of bypass through the system through philanthropic contributions seems to me unwise public policy.
PTA parent Brian in Springfield, New Jersey. Brian, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi. Thanks a lot for taking my call. I agree with Mr. Reich that I wish that governments did provide more for the kids. And quite honestly, I'm from New Jersey where the state is fairly generous on per pupil spending. But outside of that argument about the tax deductibility, state laws and in some cases administrators hold the parents kind of at arm's length and keep them away from the schools during the day or from doing things with the schools. And so what's left is, the only thing that's left is to contribute money for events and money for things because the parents are kind of kept out of the door by administrators who want the parents away from the school. They don't want the parents interfering with the schools. So it leaves them with fundraising as the only thing that seems acceptable. And so as far as political organization, yeah, it would be great if parents would organize in groups and lobby in the state capitals, but they don't always have the time to do that. So at the local level, what PTAs used to do, which is organize activities and do things, you know, or do things for right. the kids that were non-monetary.
But, Brian, and we're going to run out of time in a minute, but I think one of Professor Reich's main points is that PTAs can do other things. They can get involved in policy. They can get involved in the politics that actually shape the inequalities in our education system to begin with.
I agree that's a possibility, but you know, most parents don't have the time to do that, and they want to do things at the local level within the school, and they don't have those options anymore.
If I can interrupt you, let me put the point somewhat differently. So Springfield, if I'm familiar with the place in New Jersey, you know, is not a huge city. So when I talk to parents who make individual contributions to a PTA or PTO, and then they give the argument that you've just given, sir, about, you know, that limited amount of time, politics is hard, it's uncertain what the outcomes are. In many places, in many localities, parcel taxes in order to supplement local education funds are also a possibility. And those are commonplace in many different places across the country, and those provide additional funds. Almost every single case, that's more money than could ever be raised by a local education foundation or PTA or PTO from philanthropy. And parents routinely, through the parent-teacher organization, through the local education foundation, mount these parcel tax campaigns in order to generate additional funds for their local school system, often successfully. And that's just far better from a per pupil dollar output than any amount of philanthropy through a local education foundation could be. So I find that the historical behavior of PTAs and PTOs when they're collectively organizing parents for policy purposes, either by, you know, lobbying the school board or the principal or getting people involved in parcel tax campaigns, is actually quite successful.
We just have 30 seconds left, but what do you think about an alternative model where, instead of taking away the tax deduction from PTA dues, that you kind of impose a luxury tax on PTA dues in certain schools or certain PTAs that can raise more than X dollars? You know, you don't want to provide a disincentive for them to raise a lot of money, but the amount of money that they raise does tend to follow how much money the parents have. And so if you put a sort of luxury tax on a certain level of PTA dues and then had them share that with other schools through the central district, maybe parents would accept that while this isn't going to happen.
Yeah, that's the Major League Baseball model now, isn't it?
There. It is.
You want to provide extra funds for your own kid's school or for your own team, then you got to pay a luxury tax to the entire league or the entire, you know, state, whatever.
Exactly.
whatever the district jurisdiction is. I think that's a model. I think my proposal is something actually more moderate than that. If parents want to contribute to their own kid's school, go ahead and do so, but not with a tax deduction. If you're contributing to a school with a high percentage of free and reduced lunch kids, then you get perhaps a double deduction. If you're contributing to a school where the median per pupil spending is below the state average, you get a simple deduction, the current structure.
Right.
So you can easily differentiate the incentive in order to target the outcome the way you want.
Stanford political science professor Rob Reich, he had an op-ed in the Times recently suggesting a new model of less tax deductibility for contributions to PTA dues and beyond the dues, larger contributions. Thank you very much for discussing it with us.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we'll play excerpts from the speeches, some of them very newsworthy, taking place at the UN this morning by President Obama. The president of Iran is speaking, Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, and the president of Brazil, who, by the way, canceled a visit with President Obama that she was going to make during this trip, because of Edward Snowden's revelations about NSA spying on Brazil. So a very newsworthy morning at the UN. We've put together some highlights, and we'll play them for you right after this.